and welcome. My name is Zanetta, and I'm an interdisciplinary sound artist and nature field recordist based in the Hudson Valley. My work brings deep connection with local wilderness through listening and sound. And in particular, my work is informed by ancestral practices of communing with land and the spirits of place in the Philippines. I weave together field recordings and environmental studies, sound art, and community stories to create experiences of sacred connection. And what you're going to be hearing today in this broadcast are some excerpts from a project that I've been working on called Invitations from the Land, the Zena High Woods. This project is an album and a book that is comprised of four seasonal soundscapes recorded on the equinoxes and on the solstices from 2024 through 2025. The Zena High Woods is this spectacularly quiet and amazing, beautiful, undeveloped area in the Eastern Catskills that really connects major forests. And much of this project was actually created and recorded in a smaller nature preserve called the Israel Whitman Sanctuary. As accessible as this sanctuary is, it's a super, super quiet, deep feeling place where you can just have amazing encounters with insects and birds and fishers and even coyotes. So it's been an amazing place for me to get to know over this last year. And I just want to share a little bit about how I created this project, because I think it really sets the tone for these recordings that you're going to hear today. Back in 2024, I attended a nature walk in the Israel Whitman Sanctuary, and I really felt like I had to come back and connect and build a relationship more. And in the Philippines, building a relationship with land and continuing that relationship usually involves some sort of ritual or offerings or exchange. And that ongoing exchange really guides the relationship. And this is a very, you know, simplified way of putting this. But in my own practice of nature field recording, what I like to do is often sing to forests, sing to rivers, sing to mountains. And so I began this project by singing to this forest. And over the course of 6 months, visiting and listening and singing, paintings came through, transmissions came through, all sorts of listening practices and creative prompts and ecological reflections. And it just became something that wanted to grow into something more. And it ended up that Miranda Javid of the Woodstock Land Conservancy reached out to me and asked me to teach a field recording workshop at the sanctuary. And then we decided, let's do a broadcast of the recordings that are coming through this place. And so what you're going to hear today are the recordings of the winter solstice recorded a year ago today on winter solstice, and you're going to hear summer solstice. You really can't get the full grasp of winter without listening to summer, because in that contrast, you really understand how different and how special the winter soundscape is. When everything is quiet, when all the animals are slowing down or hibernating or withdrawing or migrating, what you're really hearing in a forest is the land itself. You're hearing the elements and the forces of nature, right? You're hearing the geophonic sounds. These are the sounds of ice freezing and thawing in the stream. You're hearing cracks and pops. You're hearing the rustling of leaves and the wind through the pines and that low rush of sound. These subtle and beautiful sounds of the forces of nature are really transparent and present in winter. In contrast, the summer is this season of high song. It's every being singing at their full capacity for life. They are singing to each other and communicating and calling in mates and calling to their young and marking their territory. It's just such a soundscape of richness and abundance. And so what you're going to hear today is winter solstice first and then unfolding into summer solstice. And my hope by sharing the solstices is that you get to feel the full breadth of expression in this forest, that you hear the full spectrum of biodiversity and all the nuances of sounds that could come through a place. Interwoven with these sounds of the forest are stories of the land as told by people who have lived here, who have stewarded the land, who have deep memories of the land. You'll hear from Jan Marazita, who worked with the Woodstock Land Conservancy to preserve some of her land and has lived in this forest for 40 years. You're going to hear from Zoe Keller, who grew up in this forest and is a nature illustrator and has created beautiful artwork around the biodiversity of this place. I hope that you get a chance to really relax and to sink in and to slow down in forest time, in geologic time with these sounds, to find a comfortable position, to make yourself cozy, and find a pair of headphones or speakers to get that full listening experience, because there are truly some very subtle sounds and some very complex soundscapes. I also want to weave in that the Xenahai Woods are under threat of development. Right now, there are people who are trying to develop this land and to create roads and create secondary and luxury housing in this very forest that we're going to be listening to today. And I think that makes these soundscapes all the more precious, and I feel a deep sense of appreciation for the voices and the lives that live here in this beautiful, beautiful place. If you'd like to follow along with this project and learn more about the album release and the book and also the sound walks and nature field recording workshops that I'll be hosting this year as part of a lead up to the premiere in September 2026, you can visit my website at soundartmagic.com/Zena, Z-E-N-A, and sign up for the newsletter to be notified about upcoming events and project updates. I also recommend checking out the Woodstock Land Conservancy .org website, which is the stewarding organization that manages the Israel Whitman Sanctuary, where I did a lot of recording, and they have other nature preserves and a ton of educational programming that is just truly incredible. I also want to give a special thank you to Miranda Javid of the WLC team for supporting this project, for helping to bring together all the community members to gather these stories, walking the trails with me and helping me find places to record, and just being a wonderful partner in this project. Also, check out StopXenaDevelopment.org, which is the community group that is protecting this forest and working really, really hard on stopping development. They have all sorts of ways that you can get involved and resources, so please follow them for more information. Lastly, but not least, I would love to thank this forest and to thank all the beings who made these recordings truly possible. I get to amplify what is already in existence and who is already singing. So just acknowledging that these are the voices and the lives that we're hearing, and it is their art and their existence which has created the soundscapes that we're going to hear in this broadcast today. So thank you so much for listening, and relax, enjoy, and without further ado, here are the Xenahai Woods.
I am the oldest living here, living for as long as I am, except for Jean. She's been here about 70 years. I'm here 43. My land is what you see, except for that little cutout over here. And it used to be a goat farm. And it was owned by a gentleman named John Bosco. I'll skip right to the pond, because that's the center of everything. We had the branches, we had the bushes, we had trees. So what do I have? Blackbirds making nests. Geese using the grassy hummocks to make their nests and raise their children. I have wood duck. I have mallards. I've had egrets. I had a kingbird. I have herons. I've had sandpipers. I was sitting on the ground looking out, watching, and here comes two geese out of the pond. They walk right over. One sits here and the other sat there, one on either side of me, literally touching me. I could feel their heat. And then they just sit there, put their heads down, and they're sitting. I was petting them. And then they suddenly said, well, okay, back in the water, and off they went. Nobody has that happen. Nobody. But they knew me. They knew me.
I feel that with this place, that there's a certain kind of closeness that you can experience.
There's two crossings for the stream. There's an upper crossing and there's a lower crossing. And the lower crossing, Dan was down there straightening it out and making it secure so we could get across. And he's working with the gravel and the rocks. And he said to me, he said, I felt like somebody was watching me. And he turned around and there's a big deer right behind him. And she's got a baby. And she pushed the baby to Dan. He says, so I sat down and the baby got in my lap. And she walked away. So I'm petting it and talking to it. So when it finally mom came and called it and they wandered off, he got in the car, he ran home to where I was. He said, you got to come see this baby. We've got to see it. So got in the car, came over, and he says, it was down here. As we walked down a hill, there's a big pine tree with a shaft of light going right down the trunk. There's the baby. We sat with it for a while. Mom stuck her head out from across the road. She said, oh, it's you too, no problem. Play with the baby. That's the kind of stuff that happens here.
How would you describe this particular place?
Serene, peaceful, quiet. That's the three main adjectives I use here. Where they're building used to be a beautiful field. Then there were foxes and all sorts of things. Now, you could sit in the grass, and the grass is taller, so nobody sees you, and you see the deer come by and the bobcats. One late afternoon, I walked across the stream, and I was walking up the stone wall. And at some point, you have to cross underneath a big pine tree. There's a low-hanging branch. So I walked underneath, and I got about 10 feet, and I heard boom, boom. And I turned around, and as close to me as you are was the face. It was a mountain lion. I knew it from its tail. I knew it from its face. And I'm saying, yeah, I'm dead. I mean, all these things are happening so fast. Your brain is going a million miles an hour, and your stomach is in your throat, and you don't know where to go. And she looked at me, and I looked at her, and she turned to walk away. So I turned, put my back to her, which everybody says you don't do. And at one point, we both stopped and looked back at each other. It was like a magical moment. And then we just went, and we went our own separate ways.
I had a kind of similar encounter, but not with a mountain lion, with like a wolf. I was like, there can't be a wolf, but it was so large. It was so big. It had to be of the like Eastern variety if it was, but it was so large. And I also did what you did.
Turned around.
I actually sang at the wolf. And then I slowly turned around and kept singing. And then I turned and it was gone.
Yeah.
It was probably like where your fridge is.
Mm-hmm.
It was simultaneously the most exhilarating experience and the most terrifying experience. That's
exactly
ever had.
It. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no explaining it.
And so I think IWS for me has a certain kind of magic. It's different there.
This is a magical place. It's truly a magical place.
I grew up on John Joy Road for the first 10 years of my life. And then when I was 10, we moved around the corner to Zena High Woods. We had gray blue herons that nested across the street in the swampy area next to Eastwoods Drive. And every spring we would watch them fly overhead with giant sticks in their mouths. And then they would build their nests in the top of the trees, cackling to each other from the nests, and they sounded like dinosaurs, and it was just such a prehistoric little spot that was directly across the street. And there were a lot of seasonal changes, like there would be a wave of toadlets that would come through the yard, and we had hawks that nested around the house. It wasn't that rare that bears would like trundle through while we were going to the bus in the morning. For 9 months from the first day of spring in 2024 through to like late fall, early winter, I went on almost daily walks. I had Merlin running the whole time, and I brought a camera and just photographed everything. I thought of myself as being pretty aware of what was here, but then through this practice of daily walking, I was recording over 100 species of birds. And then I had like all this data that I was collecting, and I started drawing every bird that I recorded or saw. The Zena development developers claimed that there were just like a few deer in the woods. And I thought, oh, maybe I should just show everything. So then I created the Zena Woods Biodiversity Drawing to tell the story of Israel Whitman Sanctuary and the neighboring Zena Woods as if you were able to spend that whole 9-month period there. I'm always trying to get at this idea that everything is so connected that you really can't piecemeal. You can't save little pieces and expect that you're saving everything. Now, that's the idea that Stop Zena Development is working with, this idea that this piece of forest might look small in the scheme of the Catskill region or the New York State, but it's such an important piece that connects this enormous tract of forest that's thousands of acres, and we have to save it in order to allow all of the animals and the plants to move and live. I've been thinking a lot lately about the ways that it's changed. And I think that plugs into the development part a little bit. I have all of these memories of looking for salamanders and catching turtles and, you know, memories of being in the woods and what that felt like. And as wonderful as it was to go on these 9 months of walks and to see so many things that I hadn't noticed, there were things that I expected to see that I didn't see. I didn't see any salamanders except for a couple that were killed by cars and some around the amphibian migration season when I went out at night to look for them. And that's very odd to me. It used to be that you could pick up any rock and find a salamander underneath it. And that doesn't seem to be the case right now. And didn't see any turtles. I did see most of the mammals that I would expect to see, but not in the number that I would expect to see them. And a change that my family's talked about and my neighbors have talked about is the way that the forest has this park-like feel now. Like you mentioned when you had the encounter with the coyote, how you'd notice that you could see for a great distance. We used to have enough of an understory that every house on our street felt very secluded. And now we can see all of our neighbors because we can see right through the trees. And that's a really big change. The trees are dying. All of the hemlocks have the hemlock woolly adelgid. With the combination of the drought and the spongy moths, my family lost our biggest oak, and a lot of the other oaks around, and a lot of the pine trees have gone. We had an arborist out, and he was explaining that the pines have gone because of a combination of four funguses that have kind of exploded because of the change in the rainfall patterns and temperature patterns. And the trees that are really thriving, our understory has a carpet of baby-striped maples. And I understand now that that is in part because deer don't like eating striped maples. So just even with like my child's viewpoint from growing up here and with a very amateur naturalist understanding of the forest now, I have an understanding of how much it's changed in the past 35 years and is going to need some human intervention to roll back the harm that we've done if it's going to be a forest. It just feels like this really pivotal moment when if we don't find ways to steward what we have and to help support the next generation of trees and to restore the understory, that we'll just lose so much. And it's so blasphemous that in this moment, with what we know, if instead of helping the forest, it's like cut down, and so like a huge part of it is cut down, and Xena Development is looking to build vacation homes. More second homes. And that's not what the community needs. I was so excited to hear that you were doing this project, thinking about biodiversity loss and specifically the loss of insects and amphibians. I had this moment a couple of summers ago when I was like, oh, like nighttime might sound different here in maybe even a few years or a few decades. And the night chorus, like crickets and katydids and cicadas and spring peepers, thinking about the way places sound specifically, the forests around Israel Whitman definitely sound different now because we have ravens, which we didn't have before. And they are so loud. And their calls are so distinct and so spooky. They're just like a little reminder. Like, even if we never cut down a different tree in a few decades, this place will be different because the climate is shifting and the way that species move through the landscape and what species make homes here will be different. When I think of what home is, to like be even more specific than this place, it's like summer evenings. That's just like right back to my childhood, like being in bed with the window open and listening to everything happening outside and being kind of like enraptured, but then also getting like little chills up your spine. The owls always spooked me out as a kid. Now I love them, but there was one that used to hang out right outside my window, and like in the dead of night as I was falling asleep, it would just like rip. I'm just so thankful that there's going to be this like time capsule of what the forest sounds like in this moment so that I can listen back to it.
You've been listening to excerpts from Invitations from the Land, the Zena High Woods. This is a year-long album and book of seasonal soundscapes sourced from the Zena High Woods in the Eastern Catskills. My name is Zanetta, and if you've enjoyed listening to this project and would like to learn more about the upcoming premiere and upcoming soundwalks and nature field recording workshops, along with supporting this project, you can check out www.soundartmagic.com/Zena, Z-E-N-A. A special thank you to Chris Dingman for mixing and mastering this project. Thank you to Jan Marazita and Zoe Keller for their stories of the forest. And a big thank you to Miranda Javid and the Woodstock Land Conservancy team for supporting this project. Thank you again to Wave Farm Radio for this broadcast space. If you would like to know more about the Israel Whitman Sanctuary and the other nature preserves, check out www.woodstocklandconservancy.org and also check out stopxenodevelopment.org to find out about local environmental protection and action for this forest. Thanks for listening and take care.